Support for this episode of Judaism Unbound comes from the Ashman Family JCC in Palo Alto, California, whose vision is to be the architects of the Jewish future. The Ashman Family JCC is an incubator for new expressions of Jewish identity. It creates innovative Jewish learning, celebrations, and arts programs that inspire personal connections to people and ideas from across the Jewish world. Learn more at www.paloaltojcc.org. This is Judaism Unbound, episode 108, The Jewish Studio Project. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
And we're here continuing our series on spiritual entrepreneurship, looking at the four organizations that are part of the first cohort of Moshe House's Open Door Project. And today we're going to be looking at the Jewish Studio Project. The Jewish Studio Project is based in Berkeley, California, and it was created to provide a new entryway into Judaism, one in which creativity is a pathway for connecting to tradition, cultivating community, and ultimately bringing more good into the world. The Jewish Studio Project describes itself as part urban art studio, part house of Jewish learning, part spiritual community, and its goal is to activate creativity in individuals and communities to make life more meaningful, Judaism more vibrant, and the world more just. The Jewish Studio Project is pioneering a unique methodology that it calls the Jewish Studio Process, combining Jewish learning and creative arts exploration to investigate relevant questions about our lives and tradition. From this foundation, the ambition of the Jewish Studio Project is to build a creative Jewish movement that sparks a culture of creative spiritual engagement, infuses Judaism with new voices and diverse perspectives, empowers individuals with creative confidence, and addresses our society's increased polarization and divisiveness. The Jewish Studio Project does a variety of work that we'll talk about, including having a national profile in working with Jewish professionals, but it also has created Studio the People Studio, a creative art studio in Berkeley that includes creative learning experiences, hands-on ritual and prayer, justice programming, and community gatherings. Today, we're speaking with the founders of the Jewish Studio Project, Adina Allen and Jeff Kazowitz. Adina Allen is the creative director of the Jewish Studio Project. She has rabbinic ordination from Hebrew College. That's a non-denominational rabbinical school in Boston. She's worked as an educator at Tufts University Hillel and the Brandeis Collegiate Institute, as well as having been a chaplain at Hebrew Senior Life. The Jewish Studio Project comes out of Adina's own biography, in which her mother is an arts therapist, and she has come to fuse those two aspects of her life together, which we'll learn about in our interview. Jeff Kazowitz is the executive director of the Jewish Studio Project. He has an MBA and MPH degrees from the University of California at Berkeley. Prior to founding the Jewish Studio Project, he was the vice president of strategy and growth for the National Education Reform Organization City Year. In addition to his work building nonprofit organizations, Jeff is also a guitarist and singer and a writer and performer of original music inspired by Jewish texts and liturgy. He recently released his album called Arba'im Shana. So, Adina, Jeff, welcome to Judaism Unbound. We're really looking forward to this conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Could we start with just a basic description, just for our listeners who have literally no clue what the Jewish Studio Project is? Could you just tell us the basics, and we're going to do a deep dive into it down the road in this conversation?
The Jewish Studio Project exists to activate the inherent creativity that's within each and every one of us, with three goals: to make our lives more meaningful, to make Judaism more vibrant and bring new and diverse voices into Jewish tradition, and to make the world ultimately more just. And we exist as a local hub in Berkeley. We have a studio called Studio which has local community programming. It's our R&D, research and design lab and community hub. And it's what fuels the fire that takes our work nationally. We have a methodology that we teach folks that we think can enliven Judaism and bring those new and diverse voices to educators, to people across the country.
We're part urban art studio, part Beit Midrash, House of Jewish Learning, and part spiritual community. And I think what we're most interested in is providing people tools and resources to really explore the questions that are up for them, the things that they're celebrating. And we found that when we combine Jewish learning, for example, chevruta learning or paired learning of Jewish texts with creative process. So what I mean by that is exploring questions that might come up through the learning using paint or crepas or collage or something like that. We can kind of move from an intellectual engagement with our tradition into a more imaginative, creative exploration into ourselves, so that we can get deeper meaning into the questions that we have about our lives and our tradition.
How did this come to be? What's the origin story of this amazing experience that is the Jewish Studio Project?
I grew up in a studio, essentially. My mom, Pat Allen, is a leader in the field of art therapy. Our house always had a studio in it, and she and her colleagues started a number of community art studios throughout my childhood. They ran these. And she and her colleagues really developed a way of taking art therapy out of the clinical mode into a more community practice mode. So from a really young age, paintbrush and pen and were given to me as tools for exploring questions I had about the world, for dealing with struggles in my life, and really for connecting to the divine, I would say. So that was always in me. And then in rabbinical school, I went to rabbinical school at Hebrew College in Boston, and felt so engaged by the traditional mode of chavruta, as Jeff said, paired learning in the Beit Midrash, in the house of study, and really focusing on this intellectual engagement of text. But at the same time, we were being called on to be, our teachers were telling us, you know, you're the next generation of commentators who are going to bring this tradition forth and make it relevant to people. And I felt like the information was really residing sort of like from my forehead up, and I was only accessing a certain amount of myself that could engage with the text. And there were so many other, as Jeff said, so many other ways of knowing that we weren't accessing. And I found that with my colleagues, my classmates as well. So started bringing this creative process that I'd learned as a child into the Beit Midrash. So combining Beit Midrash and the studio to do this intellectual learning of text, and then to process it through these other modes, and saw that all kinds of new interpretations were coming up, ways that these texts hit people's lives emotionally, memories that they brought up, and all kinds of new stories and interpretations were coming forth from combining those two modes, and saw that there was really a yearning and a need for that, for these new modalities.
I have an instinct that it's really important to understand the difference between the way that art is used in art therapy and the way I think that a lot of people think of art, which actually I think in many ways is a lot of the way that people think about Judaism, is that that's something that the professionals do and they can do it really amazingly well. And I may be someone who's there to appreciate it, but you know, it's not really, I'm not an artist, I'm not a rabbi. I think in the realm of art therapy, art is seen in a very different way. And I think it'd be really helpful to understand some of that from you.
Great. I can't speak to the field of art therapy. I'm certainly not an expert in that and I'm not an art therapist, but I can speak to sort of what I've inherited from my mom and sort of what are the foundational beliefs of this place and how we use creative process. And I would actually say we almost always shy away from using the word art exactly for the reason that you just outlined, that there's so much baggage, I think, that comes along with that word of like, or certain definitions that are not what we mean. So we usually say creative process, which also makes it hard because I think that can mean so many things. But exactly like you said, just one of our foundational beliefs is that Jewish texts are not just for scholars and that art creative process is not just for artists. And we use creative process as a way of investigating, as Jeff said, relevant questions about our lives, inquiring into stuck places within ourselves to see what kind of new answers or information can come forth. Of processing challenges and of activating our imagination to see what new can come.
The baggage you brought up, I want to dive deeper into that a little bit because I feel like that's really important on a few levels, both the art respect where so many of us, and if I'm being honest, myself included, have said things like, I'm not an artist. And the parallel being, of course, people say, oh, I'm not a rabbi, or I'm not Jewishly knowledgeable, or I don't, like, I'm a bad Jew, those kinds of things that people like to say. So what are sort of those obstacles that you frequently come up against in the realm of, I guess, both art and Jewish, and how do they collide, and how do you overcome them, if that makes sense?
One of the things we often start by saying when we're explaining what we do to people is like, we take two things that have the most baggage for people, their Judaism and this like stuff around creativity and art, and we combine them together. So like exactly what you're saying, we often start our programs by saying like, how many of you were like are harboring a memory from your second grade art teacher telling you to like put down the paintbrush, you'll never be an artist, you know, stick to math or social studies. Because I think so many of us have that. And that's really one narrow definition of like what art can be that our society has decided on. And we're really trying to open up those possibilities of what it can be.
One of the things that happens to us as we get older is we grow more inhibited. You know, often when we say that we have a Jewish art studio, people think, oh, this must be for kids because kids know how to play and kids aren't self-conscious about their creativity and less inhibited. And we haven't really been working with kids so much, and we're focused, at least in this initial phase of JSP, on working with adults, precisely because that's where the opportunity is to activate this creativity that may have been dormant for adults. And they may be harboring, like Adina said, these memories of when they've been shut down earlier in their lives around creativity. And it's so, we have just found that it's really good things happen when we can activate creativity in adults. We can learn new insights about our lives. We can connect to one another really deeply through creative community. It really feels like the work is around creating a brave space for people to go into this vulnerability, kind of chip away at these inhibitions and develop some creative confidence that can add a lot of meaning to their lives.
You and we both agree that there's something so deep here. And when I've been in the room with you or been in the studio with you, there's this like gut level feeling like, wow, there's something so deep and important here. And I'd love to sort of tease it out, because it's like, on the one hand, there's art, there's the creative process, or there's the process of creating art. But there's also the idea of the experience of Judaism being an experience of creation as opposed to an experience of whether it's absorption or reflection or whatever it might be. We don't think of the Jewish experience, whether that's of prayer or of study, as being creative. I think there are some people that think of the experience of study at its best as being creative because you're creating your own interpretations. But that's, again, seen as sort of the elite. Okay, you know, I remember I once had a conversation with a person that I was studying with, and I had a particular take on the text, and they asked me, well, what commentator did you get that from? And I said, well, I just read it, and that's what I think, you know. And the person said, well, you can do that? And I said, yes, you can. You know, it's so unusual to have this experience where you're actually bringing your own creative insight, and that that's somehow given validity. And that's not how people think of what a Jewish experience is supposed to be. It's that someone else put it there, and I'm here to sort of tap into it. So I think that's really deep in here, and I'd love to hear your reflections on it.
I think that's something that makes this space and process really unique and exciting for us, is that we come at it with this approach of curiosity, of really being curious about what are other people going to bring and add, as opposed to here's this knowledge that we have to impart that we want you to take away. We have a methodology, we have a system that we're teaching, but really it's about being curious together as a community and eliciting, like you said, those insights that are going to come from individuals that have never been said before, they've never occurred before, because that unique individual has never interacted with that text or that idea in that way. And I think this is always what rabbis, what scholars have been doing throughout Jewish history. I mean, this idea, the first time that I combined this in rabbinical school was when I was taking a class in Tanhuma, rabbinic midrash, very creative rabbinic midrash, class with Nehemiah Polin. But seeing these wild, imaginative stories that the rabbis were weaving off of just like one little letter or one turn of phrase or one word, I was like, oh, they were weaving their imagination, their life experience, coming to new answers through the text. And that is exactly what keeps Torah alive, living, and Eitz Chaim, a tree of life, today. That's what we're required to do, I think, both for ourselves so it remains relevant and interesting, but also, I think, in service to the tradition so it can continue to thrive and live and evolve in the ways that it's meant to.
I want to revisit. I don't know if it's re or the first. We'll see. Like, who knows? But one little clause in your mission that I think Adina, you mentioned, but that is super crucial, is that part of your goal is to make our tradition more vibrant. And what that's actually very different from what's the way that many organizations frame their work, because so many organizations frame their work as there is this great tradition, and we have it, and we should channel that existing tradition towards good things. And that's great for people to do that. And I agree with that. We already have a wealth of Jewish stuff out there. But what the implication is of to make our tradition more vibrant is that we actually, we're not just inheriting this thing. We're like creating it. Like Judaism is not a box that we were handed and now we get to like have. It's something that we're inventing or reinventing in various ways. And I think that's really powerful. And maybe I'm drawing that, Drash, from what you're writing there, but it feels intentional to me. And it seems like something that's important and a really crucial part of the creative process. Because if you don't have as an assumption that you're allowed to sort of create the thing that is Judaism, then like the artistic that, like, I don't know how you would even fully enter in, because then you have to worry about like, is what I'm doing authentic? Is it like really, is it real? Is it like, does it have past precedent in Jewish tradition? And so I just wanted like, what led to, or what is behind that idea that we're not only, you know, inheriting this Jewish tradition and putting it into our art, but inventing that tradition as we do so?
Yeah, that's really beautifully said. A couple things come to mind. So one is that the foundational belief of this place is in the inherent creativity of each and every one of us, and basing that on Torah. So taking the idea that the first three words of Torah are Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning God created. The first act of the divine is to create. God is inherently the creative source. And a few verses later, we're told that humans are made B'Tselem Elohim, in the divine image. So we take that to mean the divine is the creative force. We are made in the image of this divine creative force. Accessing and activating our creativity is not only the way that we mirror the divine, but the way that we channel the divine into this world and partner with the divine in the creative process, in the ongoing work of creating the world.
And it's a reminder that if each one of us is made in the image of the divine, then each one of us is creative, and that there's something really important and meaningful and instructive about being creative in our lives.
It seems that Judaism in America over the last 100 years or more, maybe, has been largely a spectator sport. There was an expectation that Jewish practice was more or less something that you attended at services. And yes, there was a family dimension, but it was more or less going through a certain set of ritual practices that were prescribed. And that I wonder, you know, I guess I'm trying to get at, like, what is the diagnosis of the Jewish American condition, you know, that in some way this is the answer to? Because it seems that one of the reasons why there's a need for something new is that there doesn't seem to be the same willingness to accept that spectator sport Judaism anymore. You know, and I think that some interpretations of it is that people are not interested in Judaism. And the reason why they're not participating is because they're not interested in Judaism. And it's certainly my take that people would be interested in Judaism or anything that tapped into their skills, their knowledge, that made them feel, hey, you have something to contribute. You know, we need you to make this great. That's an exciting thing to be part of. And in some way, what you're starting to surface here is a way of doing that Jewishly.
To me, that's what it really B'Tselem Elohim like means, is to actually value the uniqueness and want to know about that of each human being. And I, again, back to that like curiosity of what is within people. I think it's inviting people to bring their skills and their talents and their knowledge, like you said, but I think it's also beyond that, giving people a way to explore what they don't know about themselves, about the world. You know, I think at its best, that prayer should have, you know, that's what prayer should be. It should help us tap into what is beautiful, alive, and good within us, but it should also help us work through that which is stuck and intractable, that which is unknown. So I think both of those things feel really important.
And Dan, I think what you're describing is kind of my history with Judaism. You know, growing up kind of in a mainstream Jewish community, where in a fairly observant family, Friday night dinners and Shabbat services and holidays and everything, and always feeling like I was receiving Judaism, always feeling like there wasn't really an entree into going deeper and seeing what all of this really had to say about my life and the world. And as Judaism has become more meaningful to me, it's really through kind of this creative engagement and being able to ask these questions about the things that are up for me or the questions that I have in my life. And one example of how this plays out in the studio is something called creative commentary. And every other Wednesday morning from 8 to 9:30, we have a program here that's part Parsha study and part creative writing. And so we have about 20 folks who've been coming almost every time now, where we a different rabbi or scholar will kind of frame the Parsha and ask some questions that spark discussion for about 45 minutes about the Torah portion. And then we partner with creative writers and authors in the East Bay, and they help through prompts. Writing prompts, they give us these prompts to personalize the learnings and the questions about from the Parsha. And so we do free writes and then we share. And it's just amazing what people end up saying, how it touches their lives. There's tears almost every time. And it really opens hearts and creates a really beautiful community of this is Jewish and this is touching something that's alive for me and this is really meaningful.
Yeah, it's cool to hear how your hesitance that I loved around the word art and your preference for creative process sort of infuses itself into the DNA through things like a creative writing that you've just talked about, which, you know, in a sense is art in a broad sense, but is definitely a creative process. And I feel like another element of that could be music. And I like in perusing your website, I noticed there were some little bits of music in the resources tab. And for me, just I definitely to the extent that I actively do things that I think of on a regular basis as, you know, creative or artistic, I should think of more things I do as that. But like to the extent that I have that thought that crosses my mind, it's usually in the realm of music. And I've definitely had an experience of sitting at my keyboard and playing for a while and having it sort of drift from something that's just, you know, fun to something that feels elevated and divine in some sort of holy sense. And I like it sounds like that's something that that's sort of a trend for a lot of your avenues of programming. But I'm curious, have you played around with music in some of the same ways that you've talked about with creative writing or visual art? And yeah, I mean, how does sort of the auditory button or vitamin play into your work in addition to that, which is visual or written?
We infuse all of our programs with music because music has the power to open us up. Music has the power, it sends vibrations through our bodies. It has the power to connect us through melody and harmony every time. If we're singing a nigun or a chant or a prayer, what is coming out of our mouths as musical notes or vibrations is kind of a gift to the person, to the other people in the room, and how that all blends is kind of one way that we can think about what creative community can look like. In my own life, I have actually taken this process personally into my creative work. About a year ago, I released an album that is new melodies that Adina helped me pair to Jewish texts. And I, while you were talking about your keyboard, I was thinking of how some of those melodies came to me. One of them I remember came as I was swimming in the Jerusalem pool like 5 years ago, and, you know, swimming for like half an hour and in a totally different, I don't know if it was kind of in a dream space or some sort of meditative state, is when this new material and this channeling was able to happen. One of the challenges of using music as a modality versus something like colored pencils is that anybody can kind of draw on a piece of paper, right? There's no kind of barrier to entry. With music, knowing how to play an instrument is it takes a little time to be proficient. However, people can typically bang on a drum, people can sing a nigun. And so we definitely infuse those kinds of elements into our programs.
We actually developed, I think it was a really cool program, which was taking Jeff's album, all of the songs are lines of traditional text, either from Torah, from the prayer book, from 13th century Hebrew poetry, and then these new melodies that I think help us to understand the text in a new way. And we developed a program called Musical Midrash, so which was a combination of Jeff performing and talking about the way the melodies came for each of these lines of text and these songs, and then giving groups of people lines of text from Torah, from the prayer book, and having them just in real time develop a melody or something that, you know, having them reflect on like the feeling of the lines, what it evoked in them, and come up with a new melody and perform them to help each other understand those lines in new way in real time. So that's one way of taking that out of that performance mode and into a creative process and community mode.
I'm wondering, based on this, if you could sort of spin out some of the fantasies of where this all leads, or not necessarily where this leads, but what this is a part of. Like, what would a future American Judaism look like in 20 or 50 years, right? That's sort of infused by some of the elements that you're talking about here. You know, what would be different as you see it?
I think one thing that's so exciting and also that's so vulnerable and scary about this as an idea is that we don't know, and we're not determining what should this look like in 50 years. I mean, I think the whole goal of this is that we don't exactly know, and that it's about being open and alive to what emerges in the moment and following that. But on a more granular level, I think it's about tons of people being activated and alive, both to their own creativity, opening themselves as channels to something bigger than themselves that can come through them into this world. And I think what makes me really excited is both what that can do for Judaism of, again, these new interpretations, new iterations of what spirituality and prayer can look like, new ways that we come together in community, as well as just how that relates to their own lives and work world. You know, this isn't about producing more quote unquote artists, but about how you take that aliveness, that connection, and bring it into whatever work you're doing, into your parenting, into the way you make spreadsheets, into the way you interact with your colleagues. A few things I would add is, we explicitly create programs that are about intractable issues. So Israel-Palestine, other issues in the Jewish world that feel just like really stuck, and that potentially more dialogue, more discussion, more debate isn't going to get us where we need to go, but actually processes and spaces where each of us can go into those places that are hard and stuck within us and move through that. Like, we're each capable of doing that. So that's one way that we try to use creative process. And we've done that in a number of different communities. The other is, one of the parts of our methodology is the no comment rule. So in all of our programs, there is the requirement that, and Jeff said that we create a space of no judgment. I think, you know, that's impossible to a certain extent. Humans judge. We judge things. That's part of what it is to be alive and awake in a space, is you have judgments. But we have the no comment rule, so that there's no commenting allowed on your own or anyone else's piece. And I think that fundamentally shifts kind of what can happen in this space. So that A, we're groomed in society to, as we talked about before, to all be creating towards a certain goal and a certain kind of affirmation. And when that's taken away, a real freedom opens up that sometimes can feel overwhelming, because we don't know, okay, we're not trying to get praised in that way. What should we create towards? But it opens up the ability to like go beyond what has been. And we also offer that when those comments arise, as they naturally do, to channel them, for each person to channel that into their own work, because actually those comments and judgments are much more interesting for each of us to notice for ourselves than to share that with another person and interrupt their process. So that's one way that we sort of enforce that or create that kind of space at the studio. For those people who find that they can't bring their full selves, their creativity, their whatever, to organize Jewish life, they don't find a space for themselves. Those people who are on the margins or outside of that experience, I think, find a place here and feel enlivened and activated, and that they can bring their voice and engage sort of their full self Jewishly. And we do a lot of professional development work, and that feels really, really important to me, that this isn't about creating something separate, but it's about kind of like bringing us all into this future together. It's hard. It's hard to not know. It's hard to let things emerge. It's hard to be vulnerable with one another. It's hard to get in touch with these deep places in ourselves. It's hard to start to untie the knots of those stuck intractable issues. But wow, if like the organized Jewish world could do that, like how amazing. There is so much richness, and we're not trying to like leave that behind. And so that's why professional development that we do feels really essential and important, because if those institutions, if people running those can start to open up and find those spaces in themselves, then yeah, so much more becomes possible than just trying to create something on the side.
I feel like we're at a time where we're starting to break down kind of binaries. And as people, we want to categorize things because that's how we make sense of the world. And I think one of the visions for the future is a world where we're not placing things into either or, and we're really understanding the both and kind of aspects of what our world is and understanding it in all its complexity.
One of the things that I feel like Lex and I have been pretty successful at doing over the last couple of years is getting people to realize that different thinking is possible, but there's a disconnect between thinking different and doing different. And when people, and I'm just sort of spinning out the possibilities of like the difference between a listener who had participated in Jewish Studio Project programs versus a listener who hadn't, and imagining that the listener who has a sense memory of doing different, so that if they hear a different way of thinking, they immediately kind of have a deep-seated sense of translating that into action, which is very exciting to me.
Yeah, and I think exactly what you speak to, that disconnect between thinking different and doing different, what is that, right? There's like deep places in our psychology that block us from actually making the changes that we think or say that we want, right? And so that is part of what the creative process is useful for, is for going into those places that can actually work through, okay, like why is that stuck and how can I understand that and parse that apart so that that change can actually move forward. And the other thing I would say that happens at the studio and in these programs is that you really, without really knowing each other, like you could basically never have a conversation with another person in the program, but you feel sort of a deep love for them. And I would say sort of that B'Tselem Elohim, created in the divine image, the uniqueness is that is each one of us. You can really see that when we do visual art programs, you see that visibly on the page. We have the exact same time, the exact same text we studied, the exact same materials, and there is not one piece that is looks like any other piece. And I think there's sort of, yeah, a deep love that isn't based on, you know, knowing everything about that person, but just about our shared humanity. If that feeling infused the Jewish world, so much could become possible.
I'm like whirling with things right now. And as I do so, I'm whirling with things in my head, in my mind, in my thoughts. And this whole conversation is about moving beyond that. And like, so I'm like I'm all over the place in the best of ways. But I'm saying that not just to ramble about where I am in this moment, but because I think what we're stumbling into here is something that there's a partnership. There's a really important partnership within each one of us, within each human being, but also between different people of thought and emotion, of head and heart, or head and maybe hand, whatever the part of our body is that's doing the creating, hand, voice. What I'm getting at is I think you're helping me think about like an inherent limitation, that there's limitations of everything, but a limitation of what we're doing, which is that we are primarily through the podcast focusing on thinking.
Something that you're helping do is also reflect back to people sort of what is beautiful about what they're doing, which I think helps them move their dreams and visions forward, which is really amazing. But I was just thinking how cool it would be if like people had listening sessions, like group listening sessions to some of the podcasts and heard these new ideas and then did creative process in response to what they're hearing about like what's challenging, what is exciting to them, and really had another way of processing and sticking with that information. What we found and how we use creative process is also to let that intellectual information percolate down. That's another phrase that we use, into those other parts of ourselves. So I think so often we have that intellectual engagement that it's like, oh, okay, had a few feelings, moving on to the next thing in my day. But what if we like stayed with that and like let things sit and percolate? What might shift and change?
The other question I have relates to another piece of sort of your mission statement, which is the justice piece, the making the world better part, which I think is really fascinating on a number of levels, because I think there's this perception people have that art is sort of refuge from the world of politics or the world of justice stuff. It's like, it's what you do to forget about those things. And there's also that perception, and we've talked about this on the podcast in the past, that Judaism is that refuge, that you go to synagogue, it is a sanctuary from the outside stuff. And it seems like you're pushing back on that, and that part of the explicit purpose of what you're doing is to help form a better world. So I'd love to hear what that looks like in your day-to-day.
Both are and should be true, both about prayer and creative process. Sometimes you need it to be a refuge from what's happening and just to like center yourself and forget other things. And sometimes it should be used as a way to help move forward in those realms. So I think both should be true and can be true. I have found that often at Jewish conferences, we get put into the like self-care, self-healing like bin, it can be that. But I really see it as a much harder, more like almost more serious in a way tool. I don't think that we can or should do the things that are traditionally thought of as social justice work, like activism, without having another part that's processing what are we doing? Why are we doing it? What have been the effects of doing it? What emotions are coming up for us as we do it? Yeah, I think otherwise we can get into some scary places.
I think one of the feelings that we all have when we are working in the studio is a feeling of hope. And hope feels like a really important thing to feel when doing justice work, without feeling like it's possible to get to a hopeful place or a better place in this world. It's hard to move towards any sort of positive change. And what we hear from the folks who've been doing this work with us is that they feel like their hearts have been opened. They feel connected. They feel hopeful. They feel like their dreams are possible.
So I'd love to just get really nitty gritty for a second, because we've had a lot of really big conversations, as we always do. That's sort of the point here of our podcast. But can you take us into like particularly a text that you looked at and then you did this form of art and it played out like this, or a series where you looked at this particular set of Jewish values or ideas and then you channeled them into this form of writing or expression? I'd love to just, break that down and hear an example or two of really what that looks like.
So we just did our first four-part series. That was really exciting. And we're really excited to do more of those. And actually, I co-taught it with my mom, which was really also really exciting to have a mother-daughter teaching experience, and also for her to bring her knowledge and me mine. And that was on chaos and creation. And the flow of the people come in, they mingle a little bit, community, there's some kind of go-around always to kind of bring people into the space and do a little bit of sharing. And then blessing over Torah study, some framing of what we're going to study, blessing over Torah study, and then people split off into chavruta over text. And each time for this four-part series, we were looking at a different part of Bereishit of Genesis. And so the first one, we started with the first five verses of Genesis, looking at God's creative process in creating the world, studying those lines, and then reflecting on our own creative process and what sort of resonated with God's process, what challenged us, what brought up new ideas about creative process, what we saw, even just from really focusing in on those verbs that are used, what can we learn about creativity and creative process from God's creative process. From that, then people do a little bit of, we have some discussion, people bring what they share, we're sort of creating a, collaborating together, bringing our ideas. And then after that group kind of collaborative creative time, people go into their own space. There's a little bit of free write, which then ends at the creation of an intention. So intentions are wording positively in the present tense what one is exploring. So instead, without using the words want or try or hope, but like and it's really whatever is meaningful and alive and what you need in that moment. So it might be explicitly based on exploring a word or phrase from the text. It might be something else from outside that you're bringing in that you're working with, like a question you have about a relationship that you're in. So the intention is written. It's then set aside. We say it's sort of like released to the universe. We're not explicitly thinking about that as we create. We've just sort of set the intention, now we release it. And then we move into working with materials. So the first session we were doing oil pastels, crepas. We start with a very little sheet, and we say we start by just making marks on the page. That's a phrase that we use a lot. So it's just making marks and seeing where it goes. Another foundational rule of the studio, just like the no comment rule, is to follow pleasure. And so that's always for any program, to follow pleasure. If you're doing something that doesn't feel pleasing or pleasurable, to switch it up, and that you have ownership over your own experience to switch it up and try something new. And the thinking behind that is that when we're in a state of pleasure, we're open, we're relaxed, and we're more new ideas and insights can more easily flow to us when we're open and receptive. Anyway, so then the creating happens, there's music on, wordless music, so people are sort of going into that, not a trance state, but sort of just getting into the creative process. They work on this little sheet, then when they're done, when they've gotten as far as they can in that little tiny space, sort of a creative constraint can be helpful with that tiny space, they move into a bigger piece on the wall. And again, making marks on the page, following pleasure and seeing where it goes. And then let's say after an hour of that, then we do something called witness writing. So you sit back in a place where you can view your piece, and you basically write in response to your piece. Do that for, let's say, 15 minutes, close that, and then there's always space that we open up for specifically for reading. So it's not for sharing, it's not for extrapolating, it's not for explaining to people. We don't find that that tends to be very fruitful or interesting when someone's explaining why they did something. So it's a space really for reading word for word some piece of what you wrote in your witness. And then we close that space, and then sometimes have a little more discussion about sort of the experience in the class at the end. So that's sort of like one kind of experience that we do here.
There's a way in which, for those of us who struggle with prayer, which is fundamentally, I think, a struggle about the words, about saying words that you don't believe. And then somebody says, yeah, but what you're really doing is tapping into the divine. And well, I'm not sure I believe in the divine, right? You know, it's like, and yet some people say, oh, but it's the music. The music is really, you know, puts you in a different place. And I'm like, yeah, that I can see, right? There's a way in which, you know, and I wouldn't call it divine, but I would certainly call it something transcendent. And in a way, however, I think like Jeff was saying earlier, it's actually really, really hard to produce great music, you know, and unfortunately, it's not necessarily so common in experiences that we get to have that we are able to find music at that level that really transcends us into that sphere. And yet I think that there's something that you're tapping into also, that this ability to sort of put me into a creative space where I actually feel like I'm creating something worthy, whether that's graphic art or poetry or something that, you know, a regular person can feel to some extent that they're doing something that matters, I guess is how I think of it, that I wonder if you're kind of circling around a new kind of prayer.
I think it is. I think, you know, I do like traditional prayer. There are things that I really like about it. So I don't think we're explicitly trying to create something to replace that. And the things that I wish or would hope that prayer would provide, I find, and I think people find, that this process really clearly provides. So one thing I'll say is that we've started doing studio Shabbats. We had our first one. We lead high holiday services. We both feel a real love and connection to traditional prayer. And I wonder, you know, might there be a time when we do like a full studio process, high holidays or Shabbat, and what might that look like? And I think that's something that's a live question for us.
I think some of the folks who come here are having an experience that they might view as prayer or spiritual. I'm thinking just this past week in creative commentary, it was pretty clear that like a bunch of folks are coming every other Wednesday, and they're not going anywhere else to find that, and that they're getting something out of the learning and the creative writing and reflective writing and sharing that is giving them what they might want more traditional prayer to give them. And then I was also, something just popped into my mind about one of the first programs we ran was for a fellowship program. And one of the people in that group, we did an evaluation at the end to get some feedback on how we were doing. And one of the people in that program graded us pretty harshly. And she was like, okay, this seemed just kind of like an ordinary art workshop that had some Jewish elements, and it didn't really do much for me in the moment. And we're like, okay, it's not going to work for everybody. And then a week later, she sent us an email saying, I have the piece at my desk in my office, and I look at it every day, and it's continuing to speak to me. And I'm thinking, and she's saying, maybe what you're doing is deeper than I had initially thought in that experience. And, you know, maybe this kind of brings up this thing with prayer for me that, like, it may not always feel transformative in the moment, but if there's a way to come back to that on an ongoing basis, which I think we were able to provide because something is actually created, that kind of spiritual experience or meaning can last longer.
So we're rounding out this episode. And as we close, I know, because we've gotten feedback from listeners about this, that often folks are listening to amazing guests like you, and they're thinking and whirling in their brains, like, okay, how could I create some form of this in my community? And so if you were, you know, some education director or Jewish professional or even just lay leader or human who's thinking, I'd like to take this idea of the Jewish Studio Project and create something along those lines in my world, in a small way, what might people be able to do?
One thing that we're really excited about, and at this recording, it has not yet happened, but our first immersive 5-day deep dive into Jewish learning and creative process is happening. And there's going to be multiple ongoing ones of those, we hope, where people can come from all over the country and really do a deep dive into this. We also so love doing consulting and coaching with people around thinking about their unique community and their needs and their strengths and how can they bring this in a way that's authentic and grounded and relevant for them. So we're excited to connect with folks around the country. But on a small level, like, what, I don't know, if you're listening at home, like, where can you take a creative risk in your life, in your cooking, in your spreadsheet making, with art supplies, in your parenting technique? What ways can you try that creative risk-taking, create a space where there's no comments happening. You can just be in free-form creating mode and then can reflect on that experience and see what it yielded.
Thank you, both of you, for joining us today and bringing some awesome Torah for our listeners to hopefully play with.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you guys so much. Thanks for having us.
And of course, thanks to all of you out there listening. We want to close out this episode, as we always do, by encouraging you to be in touch with us. And there are a few ways for you to do that. First, you can head to our website, judaismunbound.com. You can also check us out on Facebook, just Judaism Unbound. That's the name of our page. And last but not least, you can hit us up via email at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com. The last plug we like to make is that you can always support us with a financial donation, either on a once-a-month recurring basis or just one time. And you can do either of those at judaismunbound.com/donate. So thanks so much for listening. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.